as bars are shutting the party down again, should they ever have reopened to begin with? Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, local bar owners just reopened their doors. Now they're essentially shutting down again for the most part as COVID spreads throughout the state. We'll speak with two local establishments. You can call us too. It's 549-2937. Then later, hundreds of local physicians beg Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry to issue a citywide mask ordinance and downscale the Republican convention. But first this hour, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. The global total of deaths passed 500,000 Sunday, with the number of confirmed cases above 10 million. Here in Florida, we're just above 141,000 cases and 3,400 deaths. In Northeast Florida, there are 7,626 reported cases and 116 deaths, as Duval added a county record 740 additional positive tests. Over the weekend, the line remains long every day outside the COVID-19 testing site at downtown Lot J. Now, meanwhile, last week, the state once again tried to restrict the sale of alcohol in bars to try to slow the spread of coronavirus, which is threatening to get out of control in the Sunshine State. What does it mean? Well, many bars, breweries, and nightclubs either had to switch back to to-go-only service or shut down altogether. State Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried spoke out about the new restrictions, saying she thinks the bars should never have reopened in the first place.
People go to bars to be social. So certainly this move today is definitely in the right direction, but just concerned that it's a little too late. Certainly my heart, you know, goes out to so many of our small businesses that had to reopen and now potentially reclose again. They are struggling, and this is why we need to get this under control as fast as possible.
Critics of the crackdown on bars say it's arbitrary. They believe a more effective way to stop the spread of disease would be to mandate the wearing of masks across Florida, which Governor DeSantis as yet has refused to do. But we're going to see how the bar owners feel about this morning as we welcome Hannah Ferguson of the Volstead in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, good morning, Hannah.
Hi, good morning.
Also with us, Corey Adams, the co-owner of Southern Swells Brewery in Jacksonville Beach. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And these two establishments are back to doing basically to-go orders and some delivery. And as we talk with them, we want your calls. What's your reaction to the latest attempt to slow the spread of COVID in Florida, essentially shutting down most bars to in-person partying and drinks? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and already getting your Facebook comments. Hannah at the Volstead, let's start with you. Did this announcement Friday surprise you?
Honestly, it did surprise us just a bit. We did feel that it was too soon to open, but, you know, we were following all guidelines. We were very strict about, you know, social distancing, wearing masks and everything. So we're doing everything in our power to be as, you know, compliant with everything. So this kind of took us by surprise just a bit.
Yeah. How about you, Corey, at Southern Swells at the beach? Bars and restaurants have received guidelines from the state on what they could and couldn't do. That's all changed again.
Yeah, it would definitely came as a surprise to us as well, you know, particularly the manner in which it was distributed. A tweet about 15 minutes before most bars and breweries were to open was a kind of a shocking way to receive this information.
Yeah, and as a business owner, what's this like for you? And I'll ask Hannah this as well, because of course, one thing small business owners hate is uncertainty. You want to know what you can plan for, and you were shut down, then you reopened, now you're essentially shut down again for the most part. What's the biggest challenge with all of this?
I think you hit it right on the head. Go ahead, Hannah.
No, you're good. Even just speaking with the owner of the Volstead, just, you know, trying to help our employees, you know, give them a job is the biggest issue for us. And then, you know, ordering everything that we've lost over time. There are a lot of factors that go into, you know, opening up a bar again, especially after being shut down for, you know, over 3 months. So it's definitely been a really big challenge for us to try to keep the bar open.
And Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest challenges for us, being that we manufacture our products in-house is we naturally have to make decisions many weeks before on how we're going to package, what we're going to make. And that's particularly challenging because now we're sitting on a bunch of draft beer that we could have made the option to can instead. And we essentially have to sell it in crowlers as opposed to four packs, which would have been a lot easier for us to do. So the timing of everything is particularly challenging for us.
It's 549-2937 as we talk with bar owners around Jacksonville. As the state essentially shuts their doors for the most part because COVID rates are spiking across the state, particularly among young people. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Hannah, the governor has said that, you know, by and large, people under 40 are the ones testing positive now for COVID. And you would guess that the shutting of socializing in bars is an attempt to tamp down the rates of spread of disease among that demographic group. What are your thoughts about that?
So we understand the shutdown is extremely important in flattening the curve, but we don't think that bars should be the only things shut down. There are plenty of other potential gathering places that, you know, that are where cases are seen rising, and we just don't think that bars are the only establishments that should be shut down. Bars, distilleries, breweries, it just doesn't seem fair, really.
Here's a comment on Facebook from Dan. What about restaurants? They have bars. They get to remain open. You know, is this arbitrary? Or Corey, do you think that this is sort of a strategic attempt to flatten the curve in Florida?
No, and I kind of agree with what Hannah said. I think, you know, if it was fairness across the board that, you know, any establishment that was capable of serving liquor, if that was the determination the state makes that, you know, the sale of liquor is somehow spreading COVID, it should apply to restaurants as well. And while I love visiting those restaurants and I don't want to see anyone else shut down and their business hurting, I certainly do feel it gives them kind of an unfair advantage over the bars, the breweries, the tap rooms, the bottle shops that, you know, were abiding by the same guidelines for social distancing, but because they don't offer food, they're somehow less safe. I have a little trouble with that.
This has been tough on small businesses of all stripes. Let me ask you, Corey, first, then Hannah. Did you receive any sort of PPP money or aid from the city as part of their small business relief program when the pandemic first shut everyone's doors?
So we didn't do any of the city-funded relief, but we did receive the PPP loan.
And that kept you going?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly our ability to adapt to the circumstances is mainly what kept us going.
Okay.
I think it was nice to have. It did provide a little bit of a cushion for us as we inevitably did see a decrease in revenue. But yeah, I know there's many of my colleagues that did not receive that. And I think there's many people that use that to weather through this 2-month shutdown, and now they're out of money and they're forced back in the same situation very unexpectedly. So I really feel for a lot of our colleagues.
What about the Volstead, Hannah?
So, we did receive a PPP loan, but, I mean, it can only help us so much, especially with, you know, we're still paying for all of our bills like we would if we were still open full time. So it's helped us, but it's not going to help us get far.
And let me ask you both as well, critics of the way the state has managed this whole pandemic have said that Florida was too slow to shut down and too quick to open back up, and that the governor and others around the state won't listen to the pleas of public health experts. In particular, they think that businesses should have stayed closed a little longer, and also that there should be some type of mask mandate for Florida wherever you go indoors. I want to ask you, Corey, your thoughts about those criticisms first. As a business owner, how do you react to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's tough to predict what would have happened in a different scenario. I guess what I will say about this is I think if it was determined by, you know, the government or whoever that the masks were going to be mandatory, or we were going to have to, you know, gather information from any guests that come in so that we could do contact tracing if a case breaks out, I think we would have been fine to comply with it. So as a business, I would have loved the opportunity to abide by stricter guidelines as opposed to just shutting down completely. And I think it's unfortunate we were never given the chance to do that.
What do you think, Hannah?
I mean, I really think Corey said it perfectly. I feel like if we had more time to plan, really, and if there were better rules and guidelines set in place for businesses instead of, you know, shutting down completely or, you know, I think that we would have probably been better off had we, you know, prepped a little bit more.
Do you feel that the state has been too knee-jerk in its management of this crisis? Because what we're hearing overwhelmingly from business owners is how difficult it is to constantly react to these changing directives. What about that?
Hey, you want to take it first, or?
I mean, sure. I feel like it is a bit knee-jerk and just a little bit unorganized as far as just how we're getting the news. As far as, you know, our bars opening, our bars closing, you know, tweets and social media, they're, it's just a little unorganized for us to plan how to go through the shutdown, how to, you know, deal with our inventory, how to relay messages to our guests. There's a lot that can be done, and I just feel like the knee-jerk hasn't really helped us, really.
Okay, and if everyone is just tuning in on this Monday, we're speaking with managers and owners of two local bars, the Volstead in downtown Jacksonville and Southern Swells Brewery at the Beaches, as the governor and state health officials tried to get their hands around spiking coronavirus cases in Florida once again by ending in-person alcohol sales. What do you think about this? 549-2937. Give us a call. Richard is downtown. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Richard. Go ahead. Richard, we can barely hear you, sir.
Can you hear me any better?
That's much better. Go ahead.
Okay. I said that I think the thing's been mishandled from the top all the way down to the mayor. And if you were to listen to the governor the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks, he always talks about how great we're doing and things were getting better and we're opening things. It was all just a bunch of stuff to open up for the economy. And they're putting business ahead of life, and it's a sad thing. I do believe this. I believe long range. I know DeSantis has more. He has more ambition, and so does this mayor. And it's going to come back to bite him, because they have mishandled this thing from the get-go. Now, I'm in business downtown. I'm in the restaurant business, and my business is doing about 20% of what it normally would do. The reason for that is the fact that everybody downtown, the large people, the large industries downtown, everybody's working from home. So there's no business downtown. We would have been a bunch better off if we'd have shut down for how long it took until the curve actually lowered and was getting better, than to listen to all this misinformation from the governor, the president, and the mayor.
Well, let me ask you as a follow-up, Richard, how much of this do you think is driven by both local and state officials' desire to put on the Republican convention in Jacksonville and try to present an open for business sort of climate for that event?
Listen, you don't have to be a genius.
We're losing you again, Richard. We're losing you again.
I said, you don't have to be a genius.
Okay, we can't hear you, Richard, but I appreciate the call. Let me get both of your thoughts about that. Corey, you know, we do have a major and controversial event coming to town in August, the Republican National Convention. Both the mayor and the governor have expressed a lot of enthusiasm for that. Critics of the move to bring the full in-person convention to Jacksonville have accused the governor of opening the state too quickly and refusing a mask mandate and other things because they've perceived that he is focused on this convention coming off successfully. Now, the plus argument for the convention is that it could help businesses if thousands of people come into the area and patronize those businesses. The negative to that, of course, is it could further spread the disease. So as you listen to Richard calling in from downtown, what do you think of his arguments?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to take politics out of it completely, as far as like the event, I don't really care what the event is, whether it's the RNC, a sporting event, whatever. If it's been deemed by the state that it's not safe for places like the Volstead or Southern Swells to be open despite following every possible guideline for social distancing, how can you make the argument that it's safe for anything to open where there's thousands of people inside a venue with no mask requirement? So that's my frustration. I don't really care what the event is. I don't, if it's not safe for us, it shouldn't be safe for, you know, thousands of times that amount of people in a much closer confined area.
Hannah, what about your perspective at the Volstead? Certainly the Volstead would stand to benefit in downtown Jacksonville from a bunch of convention goers coming in for the RNC in August.
I mean, I agree with what Corey has to say. Sure, business would be great. It would keep our bar afloat. But you have to think about at the end of the day that, you know, the health and safety of the people who come and visit is our biggest. It's our biggest thing. Like, we want to make sure that we're not the ones contributing to the spread of the virus. So while it would help our business, it just wouldn't help, honestly, as far as from a safety concern, from a health concern, any event really at this time.
Lots of tweets, emails, Facebook comments as we talk about the shuttering of most in-person alcohol sales in Florida to react to spiking coronavirus numbers. Here's a tweet. Last week, it was migrant workers. Now it's alcohol sales. Florida should have had a mandatory mask order in place months ago. Our reopening was handled as a political issue more than a medical one. What a mess. Here's a tweet from Dan. Church gatherings are equally dangerous, but they won't shut those down. Maybe they're using COVID to become the excuse to shut down anything. Here's a tweet from Courtney. I'd like to give a shout out to Sidecar, attached to V Pizza. The owner has adjusted tables inside and out to abide by the rules, and everyone wears a mask. Thanks for that. And on our Facebook page, Brittany writes, blaming bars alone is ridiculous. It's everywhere. Grocery stores, gas stations, restaurants. You think it's exclusive to evenings in nightclubs? Mandate masks, she says, for the state. Keep social distancing in place and keep reduced capacities for stores and restaurants. We never flatten the curve. We just build a reverse ski slope. Okay, let's go to Russell in Mandarin. Hi, Russell.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Melissa.
Sure.
Wow. How is there even an argument about this? The government, local, state, the White House in particular, has mishandled this thing right from the beginning. They've handed out misinformation. You have people... supposed reporters on Fox News saying things like, it hasn't been proven that masks help. I mean, they're saying this on national TV. And everybody knew that when you started opening businesses, there would be a spike. We all knew this. We know it's going to happen. And to this point, Governor DeSantis has been in lockstep with President Trump. You know, even Vice President Pence made the statement that masks should be worn. I'm going to bet that he made that statement without wearing a mask. I guess we should just maybe trust the Darwin theory that, you know, the strong will survive. If you allow bars and restaurants to open, there's going to be a spike. There's definitely going to be a spike. And if it's a serious spike, that'll close the places down. Why not let nature take it?
Oh, man, Russell, you're a cynic.
Yes, ma'am, I am.
All right. Hannah, you know, there is no mandate in this city or statewide for masks in indoor spaces, although Jacksonville's really the only large city left in Florida that hasn't mandated them. In a few moments on the show, we're going to speak with a doctor who's leading a group of hundreds of physicians that basically begging the mayor to start a mask mandate for Jacksonville. How would that affect a business like yours if everybody came in for drinks, but they had to wear a mask?
I mean, I feel like masks are important to help with reducing the spread. Even at bars, you know, our bartenders were required to wear masks. And if guests come in wearing masks, we will find ways to accommodate them. You know, straws aren't really our biggest friend, but there are other alternatives to straws. There's paper straws and other more, you know, eco-friendly ways to help those who, you know, have to wear a mask but also want to socialize from a distance. So we would find ways to make it work, but we feel like it is necessary.
And Corey, what are your thoughts at Southern Swells? You know, a number of other beach establishments near you, like Lynch's, have had to close altogether before this statewide closure happened because they had clusters of positive cases?
Yeah, so, I think if we, to answer the mask side of things, if they were to implement a mask mandate, I don't think it would be any problem at all for us to manage. You know, our staff could very easily wear them. Some already are. And for guests, it'd be pretty simple. When you're at your table, you are socially distanced from other guests, so you could remove your mask to enjoy your beverage. And when you're coming up to order, using the restroom, exiting or entering the facility, you put your mask on. So that would be no problem at all to implement. And then, just to kind of speak about the bar closures, we're in kind of a unique advantage. We have a very large space. It's really easy for us to maintain social distancing guidelines. Mm-hmm. I know that's a challenge for other places, but I think they've all handled it really well. The beach bars have been extremely proactive. They've closed down because of one potential person coming in with coronavirus, or they've paid for their entire staff of 20, 30, 40 people to be tested. So, I think the bars, particularly here in Jacksonville, have proven that they're willing to do whatever it takes to keep everyone safe and to keep their businesses open. So it's unfortunate they're not given the opportunity to do that. And I'd rather see, enforcement and shutdowns of people that are not following the guidelines. Why punish everyone for the actions of a few is kind of my problem.
And here's an email from a listener. It seems the issue of fairness should be considered on behalf of those who are sitting at home waiting for a time when everyone just wears a mask when they go out so that they can go about their day without the fear that their fate is in the hands of careless others. Okay, lots of calls on this as we speak with the owners of the Volstead and Southern Swells breweries about the new statewide order ending on-site alcohol sales at Florida bars. This is all to try to flatten the curve once again in Florida as coronavirus cases keep breaking single-day records in the state. Brian is in St. Augustine. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
How are you?
Go ahead, Brian.
So I'm just kind of listening in, and I think, so I'm in St. Augustine where we obviously now have the mandate to wear masks. I also own a restaurant in St. Augustine as well as a butcher shop. So I actually kind of see both sides of it as far as the retail versus the restaurant side of things. I do kind of agree and disagree with what I'm kind of hearing. I agree that it doesn't really make sense to just overall shut down all bars, but I also kind of see the other side of things, that I feel like a restaurant's a little bit more controllable as far as how guests are entering, and once they're sat at a table, as far as being able to kind of watch what they're doing, compared to a bar where it's obviously a lot more of a social setting, a lot more movement, and then there's more alcohol involved. But I do, being that when we went through the shutdown, having to shut down my restaurant, I feel for anybody that has to shut down their business. We didn't receive PPE the first go-round, which was extremely difficult. Luckily, we had a butcher shop that was extremely busy during that, which kind of allowed us to keep most of our staff on at the restaurant. And,
what's the name of your place, Brian?
So I own Preserved Restaurant, which okay. is downtown in Lincolnville. And then I own a butcher shop called The Chop Shop as well.
Now you're down in St. Augustine. Let me ask you, you're down in St. Augustine where they did pass a mask ordinance. How are you yep. feeling about that as a business owner?
I see both sides of it. The restaurant, it's a little bit more irritating, especially on the kitchen side of things. Retail, it just takes a little bit getting used to it. I definitely noticed as soon as the mandate went through, a large spike of people wearing masks as they entered both locations. And I think on our side, it really is there to be able to make the guests feel comfortable. Most of our staff has already been tested to make sure that they're coming back negative. We've added all kinds of sanitation stations within both locations. Just how we're kind of going through our daily routines have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful, and it obviously, scientifically, you can't deny the fact that it helps stop the spread. I just, my biggest concern is, I agree with bar owners that it's not fair to do just an altogether shut down bars. I agree with that. And I do agree, the gentleman that's from the Volstead, I've definitely noticed there's people here in town in St. Augustine that I know own bars that are 100% doing a great job making sure that they're controlling what's happening when people enter their establishment. And I could sympathize with having to shut down your business, even though you're doing better than when you walk into Publix or, you know, large chains. I mean, you kind of walk in and you go, well,
yeah,
how can this be going on compared to what I'm doing in my establishment?
So, well, I appreciate the call, Brian. I want to get their reactions to you. That's Brian. He owns Preserved down in St. Augustine. Check them out. Brian, thank you so much for the call.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Hannah at the Volstead, what about that? And, you know, and I've also heard, Hannah, that some bar owners are getting around this directive because there's some wiggle room. But let me get your thoughts about everything he had to say.
I mean, it's different for everybody. And I think with restaurants, you know, there are some restaurants where you can control the number of people that come in. But there are also other restaurants that, you know, they're known for their bars. With just, you know, they have food as well. But so I don't think that, you know, you can contain all of the restaurants and you can contain all the people who are in those restaurants. So I feel like, you know, maybe regulating it, you know, restaurant by restaurant or bar by bar, instead of just shutting down all the bars, to see if that helps with lowering the number of cases. There's a lot of work that really needs to be done as far as trying to help small businesses, but also making sure that, you know, cases aren't spreading.
Thomas on Amelia Island. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I guess just a couple comments. One is I'm most interested in what is the long game? You know, the CDC guidelines are there in place to help slow the spread of the virus, but I don't see any suggestion from them on how it's going to be, you know, how we're going to finally overcome this. And so I guess my supposition is, you know, we're either going to find a vaccine, which I don't, you know, you read some reports here and there, but there's nothing imminent on the horizon, or we're all going to have to get exposed. And I think we need to kind of come to terms with that being a, you know, some probability of that being the way we get past this as a, you know, as a society. We were originally told that flattening the curve was something we were going to do so that we had the ability to treat people with, you know, really severe symptoms and you know, kind of a life-saving measure. I think last week Mayor Curry said that the ER and hospital bed occupancy was somewhere in that 65% to 70% range for Jacksonville. And of all the beds that are being filled, 14 were allocated for COVID-related people. We also know that the WHO has come out and said that 80% of all people that are exposed are either asymptomatic or have very mild flu-like symptoms. And I guess finally, I'll say that if you look at the mortality rate, it's almost zero for anybody under, I guess, 55 or 60 years old. And so,
yeah, that's all true, Thomas. But that said, there are still younger people getting seriously ill, and some are dying.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I just want to make sure people understand that.
Of course, but we accept risk in all kinds of things that we do. We drive at 70 miles an hour. We don't mandate the that everybody takes the vaccine for flu season every year. I mean, we accept risk in all sorts of measures.
That's true, but you know, it's not legal to speed. It's not legal to go without a seatbelt, and those laws are in place to protect public health. Not everyone follows them, but they're still laws, and they're not universally enforced, but they do make a difference. So
I'm not talking about breaking the law. I'm saying we do 70 miles an hour where it's legally permissible. We could take that down to 50 or 40 or 30 and continue to save lives by doing it. But we don't, because the benefit outweighs the risk. And
okay.
I'm saying if unless we believe there's a vaccine, we're going to have exposure, and doing it in a safe way where there are hospital beds for treatment, maybe it's just the elderly and at risk that need to be isolated.
Thomas, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. The caveat I would give to your call, Thomas, is it's younger people who are primarily getting the virus now, hence the state closing the bars, almost closing the bars. Corey Adams at Southern Swells, I want your final thoughts.
Yeah, so I guess final thoughts, it particularly applies to my industry, which are breweries. So we are manufacturers of products that have adjacent tap rooms. So it's very challenging for us to be kind of always grouped in with either a restaurant or a bar and nightclub by definition, because we are really neither. We're kind of our own unique business. We have, you know, particular sanitation processes in place because of the nature of manufacturing the product in-house that far exceed many establishments. So I would just ask that, you know, the state consider, you know, treating us differently because we are, in fact, a different subset of the hospitality industry. So I guess that's kind of my final thought.
Here's a tweet echoing what that caller just said from Topher. I don't understand singling out one business and removing their livelihood. Either we're mitigating or we're herd immunity. Half the people are doing one while the other half are doing the other. And the leadership seems split as well. We're either stopping the spread or we're not. By the way, here's one more tweet. St. John's County has a number of restaurants not adhering to the guidelines, and they're actually flaunting it on Facebook, she writes. More tweets and Facebook comments, Hannah, at the Volstead that we could ever get on the air. But now that you're essentially shut down again, except for to-go sales, I want to make clear you guys are both still doing that. What's your plan Correct. For the next few weeks?
Yeah, so kind of going back to how we did it before, we are offering to-go cocktails, pickup, and then also delivery. We also have a package license, so we can also be treated as a liquor store. So there are different ways to support us, and I just want to encourage everyone to do that.
Right. You can support your local establishments right now, bars that fall under this new statewide regulation, whether it's the Volstead downtown or Southern Swells Brewery at the beaches, by stopping in and getting a to-go order. You can do that. You cannot go inside and belly up to the bar anymore, at least for the time being, to get a drink, because the state has tried to flatten the curve once again with skyrocketing COVID numbers, particularly among younger Florida residents, by ending the party at the state's bars. They had been open since June 5th. In the second phase of the governor's effort to revitalize Florida's economy, limited to 50% indoor capacity. Now, this new rule doesn't apply to restaurants, which are still limited to 50% indoor capacity around the state, but they are open. And I want to thank you both so much for sharing your thoughts about your businesses with us, as we spoke just now with Hannah Ferguson of the Volstead in downtown Jacksonville. Hannah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And also on the line, Corey Adams, the co-owner of Southern Swells Brewery in Jacksonville Beach. Corey, thanks to you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And a quick clarification, an earlier guest called in a minute ago about herd immunity. Certainly a worthy goal until we get a vaccine. It's not likely for the time being, according to recent studies on COVID. Henry emails us to point out antibodies to the disease can disappear after a few months, so we can be vulnerable to a second exposure. Bottom line, there's still so much we're learning about this illness that it's a rapidly changing story. What we're committed to doing here at the station at WJCT is bringing you updated information from public health experts and others as we get it. Speaking of which, much more still ahead. Later, how you can support local artists and Yoga for Change all at the same time. But up next.
Physicians in the community are extremely upset to hold an event indoors with thousands and thousands of people, plus additional vendors and press and protesters. Is absolutely an insane thing to do right now.
Jacksonville doctors are rising up and descending on City Hall with demands for the mayor. I'll explain after this.
The quest for D.C. statehood has taken on a Don Quixote flavor, but for the first time in over a decade, legislation that would grant the district statehood status has appeared before Congress. Why isn't D.C. a state? And after Trump's reaction to the D.C. protests, could the issue finally get national recognition? The push for D.C. statehood, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Electro Lounge can now be heard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on WJCT 89.9 HD4 Electro Lounge Radio or on the WJCT app. Electro Lounge Radio, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share hand-picked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Welcome back. Well, this week, a local group of physicians plans to descend on Jacksonville City Hall wearing masks and white coats. They say they're going to hand deliver a letter to Jack's Mayor Lenny Curry, essentially begging him to issue a citywide mask ordinance and to downsize the planned Republican National Convention here in August. More than 200 local doctors have signed on to this letter. They say their goal is simple: to stop the spread of coronavirus in this city. I spoke about it with Dr. Nancy Stotts, one of the leaders of the group. Take a listen. Dr. Nancy Stotts, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Melissa. Good to talk to you, too.
You are part of an ad hoc group of physicians here on the First Coast who is sending a letter to Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, raising alarm about the way coronavirus is being handled in this community, and in particular, the Republican National Convention in August. What are you trying to communicate to the mayor?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First and foremost, as physicians, we train to take care of patients and to care about public health. And it's very concerning to see the infections rising as they are. And so we know from scientific fact and studies that the masks, the use of masks and social distancing will decrease the spread of the virus, and that should be our first and foremost goal. And that's our main concern at this very moment, is that we implement the use of masks being required anytime people leave their home.
You want the mayor to institute a mask ordinance for the entire city?
Yes. Because that is the only way, combined with social distancing, to decrease the spread of the virus. The studies have proven about a five-fold decrease when masks are utilized.
Other major Florida cities have done this. Miami, Tampa, Orlando, St. Augustine's looking at it. What's your response to those who say, well, you can't enforce it? Because we've heard that from both the mayor and the sheriff here in Jacksonville.
Right. Well, I think any time you have an ordinance like this, it has to be commensurate with what you're trying to accomplish. And there are certainly ways to strongly encourage. We have tried to just verbally encourage folks to do it, and that's not working clearly. So we do have to have some teeth behind it. So there should be a fine or refusal of service, similar to proper attire from the beach, for example. So I don't see a problem. And frankly, Melissa, this type of rule is in effect in cities all across this country and in many other countries. So if our leadership needs examples of how to do it, I think there's a lot of people they could reach out to in terms of how to effectively get this done.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to lobbying the mayor on masks, in your letter to him, this consortium of physicians is asking him to postpone or reduce the size of the Republican National Convention.
Correct.
And that's not likely, given how enthusiastically the city pursued the event. But how are you trying to make the case to the mayor and others?
Right. So, first of all, when the mayor and the governor got together to offer up Jacksonville for this event, I believe in my heart they had the best of every intention and wanted to do things, you know, to help our city and our state. However, we are not in the position we were in even 2 weeks ago. And in 2 weeks from now, we're going to be in even worse position. So this warrants a review of the situation because the tables have turned. This virus, Melissa, is extremely unpredictable. And as physicians, I'm not going to say we're powerless, but we essentially have supportive care. That's what we have. We don't have a vaccine, and we don't have very good treatment. So we have to do things to prevent the spread. And we know that gatherings of more than 50 people are prohibited not only by the CDC guidelines, but by the Florida Surgeon General's guidelines that were issued on Monday.
Given all of this, beyond sending a letter to the mayor, what else do you anticipate the medical community in this city can or should do to get these concerns across?
Well, we're hoping that cooler heads prevail and that everyone takes a deep breath, no pun intended, behind their mask, but takes a deep breath, really looks at things, and we can approach this from a rational public health standpoint. If we can't, honestly, I think physicians in the community are extremely upset, and they have tried to go along and get along, but I think we all can reach a breaking point, and I'm not sure what might happen, but I think to hold an event indoors with thousands and thousands of people plus additional vendors and press and protesters is absolutely an insane thing to do right now.
Dr. Nancy Stotz, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melissa.
We'll continue to follow those doctors' efforts. The city of Jax did issue a statement in response to media questions about the letter from physicians saying they haven't received it yet, but that they will speak with the doctors and react when they do. We will publish the letter on our website. You can already check it out at a number of other local news websites. And, you know, new this morning, the governor over the weekend did say he did very slightly walk back full commitment to an in-person convention for the Republican Party in Jacksonville in August, saying that they're looking at these concerns. So it's something we'll continue to follow here on the show and at 89.9 and on our website at WJCT.org, where, by the way, you can get a little dose of good news each week if you sign up for our What's Good Wednesday e-newsletter, where we try to document the positive things people and organizations are doing in this pandemic and recession. There is positive news out there to share. So if you go to WJCT.org, look to the right side of our homepage and sign up for What's Good Wednesdays. We send that e-blast out every Wednesday, and we talk about it on the radio each Wednesday morning, too. Try to lift your spirits just a little bit in this time. Speaking of which, some good news after the break as we look at Yoga for Change and their live virtual art show. We'll be right back.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington, Jacksonville East. Whether it's water, mold, or fire damage, we can help you get your business or home back up and running. ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington, Jacksonville East. Available 24/7, 721-2230. Like it never even happened.
Turner Pest Control. Turner Clean Disinfection Misting Service provides powerful virus protection for businesses and homeowners. More information at turnerpest.com.
Florida used to be in Africa. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with geologist and author Albert C. Hine about where Florida has been and where it's going. We'll discuss the Jim Woodruff Dam and what's underneath the lake it created, also Irish history in Florida. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Artist Nicholas Smith's portrait of George Floyd wearing a tuxedo and bow tie was meant to celebrate and mourn his life.
He's questioning, why did this happen to me? I want my art to show the world, like, this is a human being that lived on this earth and should still be living on this earth.
More on the activism in Smith's paintings of black heroes and victims of police brutality this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
More than 500,000 people work in America thanks to H-1B visas. That number could freeze and maybe crash down after a new executive order from President Trump. But how do work visas work? And does suspending them really mean more jobs for Americans or fewer jobs for anyone? The future of work and immigration in America next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Yoga for Change is hosting its first live virtual art show tomorrow night at 7 p.m. It'll be live on their YouTube channel, and it will showcase one piece of artwork from 10 local Jacksonville artists. Here on the line with more, Brianna Tivis, Director of Development at Yoga for Change. Hi, Brianna.
Hi there.
And artist Ansley Randall of Jax is Rad. Hey, Ansley.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to talk to you both. Bree, let's start with you. Yoga for Change is known for bringing yoga to people who need it most. People incarcerated, veterans, people with mental health issues. How did you decide to get into the art business?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the pandemic, we actually unfortunately had to, we have about 40, anywhere from 40 to 50 contracted yoga teachers throughout the state of Florida. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we actually had to let them know that we didn't have any work for them. And among our teachers is a lot of actual artists and people who have other passions as well outside of yoga. And so we found it as a good way to, like, bring the community together. And we started with one of our yoga teachers who is based out of Orlando. We used some of her artwork and did an Instagram. We sold some of her artwork through Instagram. And so that just went really well. And we were able to kind of catapult that and work with other artists across the state. And then that birthed this event.
How can people be part of this? This is going to stream tomorrow night on your YouTube channel, correct?
Correct.
So they just need to log on and they're at the art show.
Yep, it's as simple as that. Yep.
And that's the way we're all living now. And so you're showcasing 10 local artists, including Ansley Randall. Ansley, what's it like to be part of this? It's a new way of showcasing your work.
Yeah, I think it's so cool. I mean, you've seen all through this in, like, the last couple months of just artists using virtual kind of even Instagram stories or going live to showcase their work, but it's really neat. All of us kind of coming together and using the Yoga for Change platform. I've always admired their nonprofit, and we've done a lot of work together throughout the years with Jeff and Drad, so
and
I'm stoked about this.
And tell us a little bit about your piece that will be exhibited.
So I mean, I paint patterns and all kinds of stuff. I love mid-century and mid-century furniture. And so that's kind of my piece that I donated was a mid-century 8.5 by 11 frame piece of furniture, like a little scene, still life.
Very nice. So, Brianna, what other artists have been tapped by Yoga for Change to be exhibited in the virtual art show tomorrow night?
Yeah, so we, outside of Ansley, we have 9 other artists showcased that are all local to the Jacksonville community. Meredith Mason is one of them, actually, and she will also be co-hosting the event with us. So you'll be able to see her live on the YouTube channel. And we'll also be, a few of the artists have also opted into doing a Meet the Artist, so you'll also get to meet some of the artists through the YouTube channel. They'll be calling in and doing like a 2 to 5 minute about them and about the piece of artwork. And so the 9 other artists we have are Michael Slayton, Jennifer Lael, Brittany Govelek, Teresa Cook, Callie Martin, Jennifer Brinkley, Aisha Miskin, Tatiana Kitchen, and then Mayor Mason and Ansley.
And this is a way people can support local artists, but also support Yoga for Change. The portion of the profits will go to your organization. Can you share a little bit more about what Yoga for Change does.
Sure. Yeah, that's correct. So a portion of the sales will go to the artists and a portion will go to Yoga for Change. Yoga for Change, as a nonprofit, was established here in Jacksonville in 2014. So we've been in the community now for about 6 years. And we bring evidence-based programming to four populations: veterans, incarcerated individuals, youth, and people who are living with mental health conditions.
And when you bring yoga to these folks, what's it like to see them maybe go from never having done it before to getting the benefits of yoga?
It's amazing. we study all of our classes, and so we have note cards that we give all of our students, and we get to see in real time the impact that yoga has on an individual. So someone may come in feeling a certain way, and they get to document that on the note cards as a way for like self-inquiry and to just check in with themselves, like, how is your mood? How is your stress level? And then they get to do the same check-in at the end of class. And we see so many of the note cards that say such positive things, and we just get to see the people and the individual really go from where they came into the class to coming out more feeling more positive.
And art has the same effect, Ansley, so people mm-hmm. need to keep art flowing into their lives, too.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I have to create or I'll lose my mind, so it's great. And, yeah, Yoga for Change is amazing, like I said before, and, yeah.
So log on to Yoga for Change. Just go to YouTube and search Yoga for Change. Tomorrow night at 7, it will be their first ever live virtual art show, live on their YouTube channel. This will be filmed for viewing later. 10 local artists will have their pieces exhibited. Art can be shipped anywhere, so people can log on wherever they live. And a portion of proceeds will benefit Yoga for Change programming. Thank you so much, Bree Tivis, Director of Development with Yoga for Change, and artist Ansley Randall of Jax is Rad. Have a great time. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is station news director, and our digital editor is Bill Bordsfield. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any part of today's show, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock or online where you get your podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We will connect with you again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday and wear your mask.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.